Morning. I don't know if you're like me, but the last few weeks have been just dominated by the Olympics. Watching the Olympics, seeing all these great athletes from all over the world, the best, come to compete in one place. I DVR everything, go home, watch until I get too sleepy, watch everything. Now, is that me? That's me? Am I better? Okay. Thanks. Too high? Better? This isn't the Olympics. We have things to work out. Okay, how's this? Better? Okay. So I think what's the neatest thing, though, is when you watch the Olympics, yeah, you're seeing all these people that are at a certain level doing what they do best. And you think, okay, yeah, they swim, they run, they ride bike, they do whatever like that. But when it's really neat is when you try and compare it to, like, what you could do in that same thing. So you watch a guy swim, boom, 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 like that. Have you ever seen the length of an Olympic pool? Okay, I tried. I jumped in, 20 meters out. I'm panting. I'm hanging on the rope already, just dying. Walking from here to my truck is a rough thing, let alone running 100 meters in less than 11 seconds. So these are all the kinds of things that are just so amazing to watch. But in anything, in any competition, there can only be one winner. And that winner is measured by meters. Meters that measure how strong they are, how high they jump, how fast they run, how fast they swim. These athletes, from when they're very young, live their whole life around meters. Run faster, swim faster, jump higher. All these things, everything dictates how they act, how they perform, how they represent their countries. Now, you and I are not Olympic athletes, or at least not that I know of. But each day also in our lives, we also are governed by some kind of a meter. Whether it's at our work, where we have like performance evaluations, that measurement helps to see whether we get promoted, we get raises, and in some cases, whether we even get to keep our jobs. You have things such as electric meters. Monitors the amount of electricity we use. Water meters, those are how much water consumption. Speedometers that keep us in line, hopefully, on our streets to keep us all safe. And though for those of us who aspire to be Olympic athletes, we have monitors or meters that we strap to ourselves to find out how many steps we take, how many miles we run, how many calories we burn. All kinds of things. So we, in some way, are governed by meters as well. Now, the meter I want to talk to you about today is something that's a little less known. It's called a welcome meter. So a welcome meter basically measures our responses, negative to positive, on how we feel about people, places, things, events. The scale goes from very negative to very positive. Now, this is a meter that I think most of us don't even realize we have. It's a built-in one, came with you when you were born, doesn't really need batteries or anything like that. But it's so important because this meter and how it rates certain things can affect your everyday life. If you know that you're going to work and your job sucks, your meter is very low. So you go in there with that attitude. The rest of the day is pretty junk. If you know that it's positive, you go in with a great attitude, the day goes by very nicely. It affects your health, can affect how you perceive certain people and how you relate to them. So this meter is very strong. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I was about 16 years old. I had my license for a little less than a year. And like many of you young drivers, or if you can remember back that far, when you first got your license, all of a sudden you were on top of the world. You received your independence. You were the man, the woman. Nobody could tell you what to do. You had your license. If you wanted to do something, you just got in the car and you went. Okay? Hopefully most of you are more responsible than I was. So when I was 16, I was driving one evening, a friend of mine in the car. We had just gone to see some friends off at the airport. So it's after 10 o'clock, driving, very little traffic. So driving, I see a yellow light. Now what does yellow mean? Slow down, caution, right? No. Yellow means push on that gas because you can still make it. So I push on that gas, I'm going, I'm like from here to the back of the church, yellow, it turns red, okay? But at that point, red to me, after 10 o'clock on a weeknight, doesn't really mean stop. It means take a quick look around. Are there cars? Is there police? No, then it's just decoration, go. So I blast through that red light. As soon as I hit that red light, I look to the side, I notice blue lights coming out, okay? But the difference here is that between me and the policeman is a medial strip and a fence. So I know in my head, because I'm 16 and I'm smart, that he has to go at least 50 yards back this way, make a U-turn before he can even come and get in my lane. So I see a turn up ahead, I figure, okay, I make that turn, going at it as fast as I can, get on the freeway on-ramp, blend into traffic, and he'll never know where I am. So I do it. Take the turn up, go off, get on the on-ramp. I'm not watching where he is, okay? Next thing I know, I look in the rear mirror, he's three cars behind me. Now, a word to the wise. If you're ever going to try and run away from the police, take notice of the vehicle you drive. Policeman, Z28 Camaro. Curtis Zane, Chrysler, Town and Country station wagon with fake wood paneling, okay? Doesn't work. So I'm driving, he's right behind me now, cars are moving on the side to let him pass. I'm thinking, oh, does he know it's me? Yeah, he knows it's me, there's fake wood paneling. Who else has fake wood paneling? So I'm driving and I think, okay, law abiding, I'll pull over. No, I'm 16, I'm invincible. I cut three lanes thinking I can get off this on-ramp. Take the punchable off-ramp, blitz it off. Boom, once again, station wagon, Camaro. He's right behind me. During the meantime, he must have called some of his fellow officers. I take the off-ramp, there's police cars waiting at the bottom, pull over. Long story short, 16 years old, my mother takes me, sorry mom, to juvenile court. I take numerous lessons in driver's education. My license is suspended for 6 months, and it stays on my record till I'm 18 years old. And I'm told that if I do any other moving violation within that 2-year period, it will be revoked until I'm 18 years old, then I have to try again. So, what does this story have to do anything with what we're talking about today? Nothing really, I just thought I'd tell you. Nah, it does. So, a few years after this, from the time it happened for at least 2 years, whenever I would see police, the people who are supposed to protect us, be our source of security, safety, the ones that we want to see, the ones that you want to run to, want to have around, my welcome meter rating for them was at 0. Even though it was my fault, whenever I saw them, I would avoid them as much as possible. On the freeway, they're driving, I see them in the fourth lane over there, I pull on the medium, I pull on the side almost. Walking in a store, they're looking, they're not looking at me, but I think they are. So I walk all the way out, just thinking. My rating for them, the people who are supposed to protect us, is 0. Okay? Fast forward now 30 some odd years. My position at the University of Hawaii is human resources specialist. So what that means is that my job is to support the Manoa campus on anything from labor relations, dealing with the various labor unions that represent our employees, health and benefits, pay and compensation, training. So you think that's kind of a positive thing, right? One of the main things I do is conduct investigations. So that'll be anything from like theft, to misconduct, workplace violence, sexual harassment, whatever it is. So the departments will call us and ask us to come and investigate and help them deal with the situation. So once again, you think, okay, now I'm on the other side. I should be somebody that is welcome when they call me because I'm there to help them solve their problems. Totally different thing. And this was kind of a shock when I first started there, but now I'm kind of used to it. I get assigned an investigation. So I call the department, make arrangements to interview their people, the person who made the complaint, the person who's alleged to have done the misconduct. So what happens is, I'll call, and then at some point, the phone call goes something like this. Ring, 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 ring. Hello, this is Jane from Cancer Research Center. How can I help you? Very happy, very friendly. Oh, hi, Jane. This is Curtis from ANOA Human Resources. Hello? Hello? Oh, yes. I need to schedule some interviews and what have you. Hold, please. I'm sitting there listening to almost half a song. Oh, yes, you can come down whenever you like. Okay. I think, maybe she's just having a bad day. She didn't know, whatever, like that. It gets worse when I get to the office. Walk in, there's people having conversations. All of a sudden, it's like, people walk away, they split. People working at their desk, talking. All of a sudden, their desk is very interesting. No eye contact whatsoever. I walk in, I say like, oh, I'm here to conduct these interviews. Your room's over there. So, very different, right? These are the things that my rating towards the policemen who are supposed to be safe for us, very zero. These departments, who I guess should be happy to see me because I'm helping them with their issues, zero. So I'm thinking now, what kind of other reactions do we have to other things that happen in our lives? And I think the main thing I was thinking about is, what is our reaction? What is our welcome meter rating to God? When we see God working in our lives, when we feel His presence, when we hear that soft voice in our ears saying, do this, don't do that, what have you. At that point, what is your rating for Him? Of course, all of you are going to say, it's always at His highest. What are you thinking? Are you crazy? And if that's the truth, then terrific. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes my ratings for the Lord are at zero. Sometimes I may be doing some things that I know are wrong, but they're all so good. So at that time, I don't want to see the Lord. I don't want to hear His voice in my head saying, Curtis, what you doing, bruh? I don't want to see Him. And there are other times when, like, I welcome it. I yearn for it. The time in the morning when I get to relax and worship Him just quietly, nobody else around, sometimes are so high. But then it fluctuates so dramatically. So I think in my mind, is that wrong? Am I the only one that feels like that? Is there any other cases where that has happened before? And what happens when I hit rock bottom? So I went to the Bible, and the Bible is so full of stories. Stories of people, individuals, that provide us with some kind of support, some kind of encouragement, that show us that we are not alone in this. So let's take a look at some of those. Our original parents, Adam and Eve. Book of Genesis tells us that they were created by God, the first people. They had unlimited access to Him. They lived in the Garden of Eden. He would come, walk, talk story, eat with them all day. They would laugh, play around, whatever they did. Their meter rating for Him was always at its highest because they were living in paradise. Genesis 3, what happens in there? All of a sudden, something goes wrong. One day, Adam and Eve decide to eat the fruit of the tree that the Lord said they shouldn't eat of. And in that split second, they recognize that they are naked and they're ashamed. So they hide. And at the very moment when they normally would be out waiting for the Lord, waiting for Him to come to the garden, He comes. Hey, Adam, Eve, where do you guys stay? They're hiding in the bushes. They don't want to come out. Something's different. Adam, Eve, hey, where are you guys? Come on, it's time to spend some time together. They finally come out timidly, wearing leaves that they sewed together to hide themselves. And they tell the Lord that they were ashamed to come out. Their rating went from super high off the charts to zero. We move a little forward. In the book of Exodus, Moses, everybody knows Moses, right? One of the greatest leaders in history. The Lord chose Moses to lead his Israelites, his people, out of Egypt. So Moses' first encounter with Jesus, with God, is in the desert. He sees a bush that's burning, but it's not burning up. He hears God's voice. At that moment, he's in the presence of the Lord. The Lord speaks to him, tells him, you're on hallowed ground. What more fantastic experience can you have than that? Face to face with his Creator. But then all of a sudden, something changes. The Lord tells him, Moses, I've chosen you to lead my people out of Egypt. All of a sudden, the meter changes. And every excuse that can be made why he shouldn't be the one to do that comes out. Once again, we look, what's happening here? How can we change so drastically from wanting to see him so much to not wanting to see him at all? In the New Testament, book of Matthew, we hear the story of the rich young ruler who by the dead of night comes to see Jesus and asks him privately, Lord, what must I do to gain eternal life? The Lord tells him he must keep the commandments. The young ruler is very happy because he can positively say to Jesus at that point, since my youth, I have kept all your commandments. I am ready. But then Jesus tells him, now sell everything that you have, give to the poor, and follow me. The rich young ruler walks away sad because he has so many things and he can't part with it. The reception is very different from going there to seek to leaving rejected. Finally, we go to Mark and look at the story of Peter. Now, Peter spends every day with Jesus for so many years, watching him save thousands of people through miracles, through speaking with them, telling about the love of God. He has firsthand knowledge. He is one of the chosen ones at that point. But yet, on a fateful evening, when Jesus is being tried, he denies knowing him three times. The cock crows. Jesus looks at Peter. Peter looks at him, can't even make eye contact. He runs away and weeps bitterly. What happened there? Now, bring it back to us. Every day in our lives, we encounter so many different things. We encounter great highs, medium days, tremendous lows. And it can happen in a matter of seconds, in a matter of minutes. How is it that we cannot focus to the point where we are always welcoming that everything that happens is from God and that He only has our best interests in mind? Are we bad because we think like that? No, I don't think so. I know the Lord doesn't either. He recognizes that we are imperfect, that we need help, a lot of help. He recognizes that he needs to be there to support us in spite of all of this. What's the neat thing about that is that we don't have to worry about his welcome meter for us going through those fluctuations. His has no meter. He is always wanting to see us. Always wanting to be with us, always wanting to love us. That's just how it is. Ruth came out of her house one day. It was a cold winter morning. She looked in their mailbox and saw a letter. But you notice that the letter didn't have any postage. It didn't have any postmark on it. All it had was her name and address. So she opened up the letter carefully, and on it said, "Hey Ruth, this is Jesus. I'm going to be in your neighborhood this afternoon, and I'm going to stop by and visit." So at first, Ruth is like ecstatic, right? Oh, Jesus is coming to visit me. But then that gives way to fear. She runs in the house, opens the cabinets, and sure enough, just like what she thought, it's empty. She has nothing. No food, no snacks, no arare, no popcorn, nothing to serve him when he comes. So she rummages around in her purse. She's able to gather up $5.40. Rushes to the store. "Maybe I can buy something." An hour later, she's coming back from the store with a loaf of bread, some cold cuts, half gallon of milk. She's happy. At least she has something. She's crossing the street, and she hears a voice behind her. "Oh, excuse me, lady. Excuse me." She turns around to face a man and a woman who obviously have been living on the street. They're tattered. They look tired. They look dirty. They say, "You know, I'm sorry, ma'am, to bother you, but I lost my job a couple of months ago. My wife is unable to work because she's sick. It's very cold and we're kind of hungry. Do you think you can help us?" She looks at them and thinks in her mind, they're smelly, they're dirty, but you know what? They're young enough that they should be able to go and get a job. She tells them, "You know, I'm so sorry. I wish I could, but this is all I have, and I have a very important guest coming to my house this afternoon. So, I'm sorry, I can't help you this time." The man looks at her and says, "Thank you very much anyway. Thank you." And they turn around and start walking back down the alley. She feels a twinge in her heart. Something is talking to her. She looks at them and thinks, this isn't right. So she runs after them and says, "Excuse me, excuse me." They turn around. She says, "You know what, here. You take this. It's not much, but you take this." She notices the woman is shivering. So she takes off her coat and says, "You know what, I have another coat at home. You put this on." And she walks away and leaves them. They're so grateful. "Thank you so much, thank you." She goes home, dreading what's going to happen next. She has nothing now to serve the Lord. She slowly walks up her stairs, breathes a deep sigh, notices something sticking out of her mailbox. She takes it up. She goes, "This is odd. The mailman never comes twice in one day." Same kind of envelope, no postage, no postmark. Just her name and her address. She opens it up and it says, "Dear Ruth, it was so nice seeing you today. Thank you for the wonderful meal and for the beautiful coat." She's no longer cold. She's no longer distraught. She's no longer unhappy about what has happened. Her meter rating is very high. She didn't see that those people were Jesus. She didn't know that what she was doing was for that. But she just did what she knew was right because God had taught her that. My wish and hope for each one of us is that someday, through our moments with Him, our experiences with each other, with other people that we may not even know, that we will come to the point also where we will see God in everything, even in the things that we may feel are so difficult. In the prayers that we pray that are answered, but not in the way that we would want them to be. But we will see God working in each one of those things. And at some point, my wish and prayer is that our welcome meter for Him will always be at its very highest. Thank you.